football on Off the Ball.
I think Liverpool have won the transfer window. Even if they don't get Isak, if they end up getting Isak, then they've blown everybody out of the water.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today.
You're welcome back to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. Delighted to say that Graham Hunter is back with us on the line. Graham, how are you doing?
I'm glad to be talking to you again after a long time. Miss you in my life.
Yeah, I miss you too. How was your summer?
It was exceptional. Very, very interesting. The fun parts would be flying in a Spitfire simulator. That was exceptional. So much fun. A week with my wife and kids in Stockholm. People, if you haven't been there, start saving now. It's a bank breaker, but it's a brilliant place. And the most demanding, the most testing month of my entire working life, which has been long on, which was TV production for a month in the Gold Cup in the States. I tried to be non-hypocritical, so I wanted nothing to do with the FIFA Club World Cup. I was offered the opportunity to go and TV produce for the tournament that contains the United States, Canada, Mexico, plus, Guatemala, who were impactful in my life, and Curaçao, and Dwight York's Trinidad and Tobago, Dick Advocaat's Curaçao, there's Jesse Marsh's Canada, Mauricio Pochettino's United States. Very, very interesting experience, working in several cities across the States that I've never even been to before. Extremely mentally and physically demanding, but I came out of it feeling absolutely like a titan, you know, having smashed the problems. Nietzsche's idea, but, you know, smash every problem, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, definitely applies to my month at the Gold Cup. I enjoyed it a lot.
Not to fast forward too much here, but does it give you a sense of appetite for next summer back in the United States and Mexico and Canada, because that could be the culmination of this year's season?
And it does, but I'm guessing that because of the way that the Irish diaspora works, there's a vast majority of people watching your show tonight who know the States better than I do. I was at for, I don't know, 3 weeks as a football tourist. The last United States World Cup, enjoyed myself fine, stayed with a friend from Tarf up in Connecticut. And even then, I would have wanted to be at a future United States World Cup. I've been pretty pungent and open amongst people I know and on social media about what I think of the state of America's democracy and the way that it's being run socially and politically. So I went over there with a good trace of fear's not the right word, but anticipatory angst, thinking I'm going to see and hear things that disgust me. And instead, the country that I worked across was extremely Hispanic, which I liked. Everywhere I went, doesn't matter what city, I was hearing as much Spanish as I was English. I never raised politics because the work was so intense, so busy. You weren't sitting around having a glass at the end of a day and starting a chat. But anybody who raised politics with me, they cried. And people of various different ages, creeds, original national family trees, cried Trump and his activities. I didn't see, I saw one incident I didn't particularly like about where that some cops treated and spoke to a bunch of Guatemalan fans, but nothing came of it. And none of that changes the reality of what's going on over there. But by contrast, it allowed me to marvel at the extreme differences in how people think, speak, act, how daily life is constructed in the States compared to, you know, where I've lived and worked most, which is in increasing order, Scotland, and then England, and now longest of my life in Spain. So it was a Pandora's box. It was fascinating. I cannot help liking a lot about US culture, mentality, but it was as odd as an experience as I expected it to be. I state again, I'm certain that you and the majority of your viewers and listeners know the States better than I did. But when the World Cup is run and organise there. I want a piece of it because, you know, I haven't failed to work at a World Cup since 2002, when I was working inside an editorial office, and therefore I was deploying people rather than going there myself. My first World Cup was 82. That was as a fan. Maybe one of the ones I enjoyed most was 98. I've lost track of it. This maybe would be my 9th, 10th World Cup. I don't know. So I want a piece of it. Oh, and you're quite right. And we don't have time. And I know you weren't really meaning to catalyze this rambling monologue, but it's just such a mad, mixed, variable, interesting, astonishing continent. Absolutely astonishing place.
Yeah, it is an addicting country. I think it's fair to say the United States of America. So we've got the Premier League and we've got La Liga kicking off this weekend, same weekend. Top line on La Liga, if we focus on Barcelona first of all, Graham, is that defending your title in this league is a bloody tough thing to do. Not too many teams do it. So this automatic assumption out there at the end of last season that, right, okay, the only way is up for Barcelona. Hold your horses a small bit, I would venture.
Stats are good. I mean, although Barcelona have done it repeatedly since 1990, the only other club that's won back-to-back leagues since 1990 is Real Madrid, and I think they've only done it once. Real Madrid have only won back-to-back league titles once since 1990. So people do talk about hegemony, but by that they don't mean that it's a one-party state. It's a three-party state, in that between Barcelona, Atleti and Real Madrid, you should be able to pick the winner. I'm going to argue with you because we're taught to stick our chins out. It'd be much safer if we wanted to start predicting league titles in March or something like that, but that's apparently not allowed. I think Barcelona probably repeat because I see weaknesses, which they're Achilles heels, which they're carrying over from last season. But at the moment, no new ones. They're going to be clear as a unit, and I mean by that squad, on Flick's outrageous tactics. They'll be better able to apply them in general. They, compared to Atleti and Real Madrid, had a proper summer's rest. I think that counts in the modern game. In the long course, it might not count in, say, the Champions League, where you have a victor in Paris Saint-Germain, who after five games in the league stage last season, where Luis Enrique told me very recently, we were nearly out. It was impossible to predict from that point onwards that we would win it, and yet they did. So in the long course of La Liga, I think that the fact that Barcelona come into this mentally and physically rested and with much longer pre-season doesn't simply help the start. And in fact, Barcelona's start might be bumpy because their financial fair play struggles carry on, such that everybody knows over there they've got Marcus Rashford now. And boy, he did two or three absolutely beautiful things, genuinely startling against Como, particularly his role in the build-up to the Rafinha goal against Cesc Fabregas Como on Sunday night. They've got Juan Garcia, very, very talented young goalkeeper that they spent minimal resources on taking from Espanyol. They've got a kid called Rooney Bargi, who they brought over from Scandinavian football, who looks like he's going to have to fight for minutes on his left-footed playing on the right coming in. And, you know, they've renewed Chesney's contract, meaning that those three signings, and Chesney plus Gerard Martin, if people remember him, all five of them, because two of them are having a new contract and the three because they're completely new, aren't yet registered with La Liga. So they've got these new resources. Marc-Andre ter Stegen and the club have been in a bit of a dust-up, quite a significant dust-up, where they fell out with one another. Barca stripped the captaincy off the German goalkeeper. He then succumbed to their wishes. They gave him the captaincy back, but he's had a back injury, so he's definitely out. So, Juan Garcia and Chesney not registered. Marc-Andre ter Stegen recovering from his back injury, and that'll be 3 to 4 months. Iñaki Peña, now the fourth choice, and he played last season as the initial deputy for Marc-Andre ter Stegen. He's off to Como, and they're kind of holding on to him simply to see if they can register their new players. And the Champions kick off on Saturday night in Mallorca, against Mallorca. So as the tape is lowered and everybody runs, it may not be that Barcelona stand out as automatic winners. But I think the squad resources, with Casado fit again, Marc Bernal fit again, Gavi now had a pre-season under his belt following his ACL absence. I think that the phrase I'm using, and again, feel free to come back to me during the season and slap me on the chops with it on, is I think that lots of rivals domestically know how to lay a glove on Barcelona, definitely. But I haven't seen one of them yet, including what I imagine Xabi Alonso's Real Madrid to be, that knows how to cope with the flurry of counter-punches that come back at them. Barcelona, I think, will have sufficient to retain the title.
To what extent are alarm bells continuing to blare with regards to what's going on underneath the surface of the water at Barcelona? Like, are you looking at this story that's come out over the last little while about the women's team at Barcelona and the suggestion that financial fair play mismanagement on the men's side has essentially reduced the squad of the women's team down to, I think, 17 players at this stage? Do you look at signs like that as the reasons for concern?
I think whoever's been reporting that literally got the tiger by the tail.
Right.
People, even in this country, fail to report, and therefore the wider audience fails to understand, is that while I think I've been vocal in criticising the previous administration, Bartomeu, the president, who lives within earshot, as having run up 1.4 at one stage billion euro global debt and paying players, really being craven and cowardly in terms of letting the players, the powerful players, which were at the time Alba and Messi and Busquets and Piqué, negotiate them into a terrible position in terms of what they're spending wages. This board looks like the Artful Dodger. The current board looks like the Artful Dodger because they are constantly saying, look, you know, we've got five balls at play here when there's only actually four. Yet they have significantly changed Barcelona's financial position. They have brought in, Barcelona are, if not cash rich in the way that you might call Manchester City or Paris Saint-Germain, they're extremely, extremely robust in terms of cash. Because what they've been bringing in via VIP seating or sponsorship deals and various other sources of money coming at you has been exemplary compared to the previous board. What they haven't done yet is that juggling of taking extremely well-played footballers and taking them out and selling them and replacing them with players on significantly less wages. Now, they thought they were doing that, for example, Lamine Yamal, but within an instant, the kid needs to be paid an extraordinary contract, and he does, because you can't lose him. What they're at now is at the final details of ensuring that the numerical equation about specifically how high the wage bill is reduced, because at the moment, La Liga are not happy with the comparison between accredited sources of income and the way in which Barcelona's wage bill looks. And the reason I said that whoever reported that got it the wrong way around is the women's team is not reported here as being part of Barca's FFP burden. So, in other words, while they've been at, and not now, but over the last two or three seasons, while they've been at the most vulnerable, in the most perilous state of my lifetime, including when Laporta took over in 2003 from a club that was running out of the capacity to pay the wage bill in the era of Gaspar and Nunez, they've been in their most feeble, perilous state, and yet they've still been investing hugely in the women's team. To the extent the women's team absolutely dominates Spain and has been at five of the last seven Champions League finals, and they've played in the last three and won two and lost one. So The fact that maybe financially there's a bite coming at the moment on the women's team, I would honestly say, well, most administrations, in my opinion, would have started that bite and perhaps even closed down the women's section years ago. While Barcelona have been investing in it, I've been making it a beautiful, I've been reporting on them and interviewing them for years now. They've made it a beautiful part of their footballing brand to watch. Genuinely uplifting. I'm not a Barca fan. I've seen extraordinary, in my opinion, extraordinary football and entertaining football. And I've seen the Camp Nou full of 99,000 people to watch Barcelona against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and Barcelona women's team against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and Barcelona against Roma in the Champions League. So I think, will things bite at the women's level? I accept that, I think so. But people don't realise that there were options all through this crisis for Barcelona to say, we're striking that system completely, we're folding it, we're saving money there. And literally, they'd have been able to sign two or three more footballers for the men's first team, and they didn't do it. I don't know if I've made my case on, but I think that if it's not extraordinary, I think it deserves to be pointed out and praised.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things on a journey through Latin America.
I'm nervous and police will use tear gas.
Jesus!
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City!
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me, okay?
Diverted has been named among Apple Podcasts' best so far list of 2025.
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. All 10 parts are available now for free via Apple Podcasts.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.
The knock-on impact on just straight-up signing for the men's team has been quite interesting as well. Like, I was just reading a piece earlier on, some reporting in Sport in Spain, that Deco had suggested that they're devastated that Šeško, for example, has chosen Manchester United because they saw him as a Robert Lewandowski successor at Barcelona. I also thought, and this was just pure gut instinct, when Alexander Isak was announcing via various sources that he wanted to leave Newcastle United, I'm thinking to myself, you know, Real Madrid, maybe they need to sort a few things out, and Barcelona are surely going to be close to the top of the queue alongside Liverpool. I guess that's probably a bit of a two-pronged question with regards to centre-forward options that haven't gone to La Liga this summer, but is it just to do with those specific players and not really part of a trend?
I haven't liked the way that the whole Deco thing has been reported about Šeško, because if anybody is anybody in a planning and financial capacity, anybody is devastated about losing a player that they might have had a devastated about losing a player they might have had a plan to sign in a year's time.
that's
all just wake up. I think that's club fan lying journalism, in my opinion. Secondly, as far as Isak is concerned, if you look at the way in which Chelsea have tooled up, Manchester United have tooled up, Arsenal have tooled up, Manchester City over the last couple of seasons, and now Liverpool, in my opinion, that's dealing in a financial new reality where, again, in my opinion, I'd be turning the focus on how are these clubs affording that healthily compared to things should Barcelona or Real Madrid be competing for. So if Isak goes, at your estimate, Owen, what will the fee be?
150 million.
So it's 150 million, which is still, in my opinion, a sum that deserves capital letters. Last time Barcelona spent something close to that, last couple of times Barcelona spent something close to that, it went disastrously wrong. And one of the things, and again, I'm not sure if I've been successful in explaining it properly, is both Real Madrid and Barcelona, if they chose to, could spend that capital sum. But La Liga's financial fair play mechanism would be extremely prohibitive, that they would then be able to pay the player, whoever it is, let's fix on Isak, the salary that is now automatically tagged to being a footballer worth 150 million euros, 150 million quid. It's quid if it's between two English clubs, and therefore, what is it, 170-ish in euros. I do not believe that Isak or Sesko are break the bank footballers, not by any deal. I've watched with amusement the way in which Isak has suddenly become this pharaonic player where, like, the behaviour between him and Newcastle is very poor. The concept of a club, specifically Liverpool, with their culture, their fan base, being willing to spend that much for that footballer, I don't understand. And I do not believe that that is the market in which Barcelona particularly are fishing. I simply don't. And I'll tell you something else too. Barcelona's, the degree to which they're hamstrung about being involved in those operations pertains to, admittedly, a director of football setup that precedes Deco. I wouldn't be Deco's number one fan in terms of what I believe he's going to be willing, able to contribute to this club. But it wasn't his fault that they built in Lewandowski on this length of deal. He's turning, what is it, 37, I think, or 38? I forget now, I should be able to tell you. In 2 weeks' time, 37 it'll be, he's noticeably slower, he's noticeably more intermittent. His numbers are very good last season because the supply chain to him is exceptional. But they weren't able to move him on. They weren't able to move him out. They built in that they would be paying him extraordinary wages until at least this age of coming up 37, because he was in the power seat when they were buying him from Bayern Munich, and they got the structure and the length and the financial outlay of that deal wrong. He's been a contributory factor to them winning trophies, but their ability to go out and punch their weight against other clubs for a striker that they really like. For example, I wouldn't be buying Gyökeres, but Gyökeres' price is different. That price wage package for Barcelona could potentially have argued about, except for the fact that they were completely unable to say to Lewandowski, we want to move you on before that pattern of worth, declining worth, reaches its peak and starts to go down. They've left themselves without that capacity. So I didn't expect, even if you'd asked me in Easter time, Barcelona to be competitive for Isak if he was going to be on the move.
Pardon the very sort of basic blunt question there, but that's very interesting on the Isak thing. But by the way, you're making me now think that this is not a done deal at all, because how these stories have tended to go is that the club will come up with the bigger fee eventually, that Liverpool will be like, all right, fair enough, 150 mil, there you go. But after what you've said there, I'm now starting to think maybe this isn't going to reach the conclusion that we all expect in that manner. But given what you said about Cesco, Gyökeres, Isak, if you want to throw potentially even someone like a Florian Wirtz in here, again, basic question, but who do you think has won the face-off with regards to these mega money signings in a Premier League context this summer?
Well, it's the Premier League. If you want an individual club, I'll give you two anecdotes. One would be that I have it from a source that I think is unimpeachable, that is completely trustworthy, that Madrid did offer in the region of 135 million euros for Wirtz.
Right.
And Liverpool not only topped that, they were paying in sterling, but Wirtz chose to come to England. Now, there's been, because again, there's often very friendly coverage for both Real Madrid and Barcelona in their corners of the media market here. There hasn't been any chat about that because, in my strong, strong opinion, Madrid were beaten to Wirtz. Now, in the moments in this, I was working at the Champions League final, and I was working at an event where we were presenting a Q&A between me and Didi Haman to an audience. And one of the audience stepped up a question and said, look, Wirtz in Liverpool, what do you think? And Didi, it was in rhapsodies, this was before the deal was sealed. He said, let me tell you, I think he is by a million miles the best German footballer right now. He said his speed of thought, his speed of movement, his invention, all of those are going to revolutionize Liverpool. And then he added, and you know what did he's like, he's sort of half Bavarian, half English by now, and he's like, and what's more, he'll take care of himself if you try to bully this flair. He said, Birch will give it back to you. He's tough mentally and physically. And so it hadn't been done. So there was still a bit of reputation to lose for Didier Amman by going on about a footballer who hadn't yet joined Liverpool. And he was in paroxysms of joy at the idea about this footballer that I would attest Madrid tried their hearts out for and failed to get.
Okay, that's very interesting. It's huge excitement. And like there is almost a general sense of borderline certainty insofar as you can have certainty with regards to a new footballer in the Premier League around him. So very exciting times for Liverpool fans, especially if they've got Isak playing in front of him. Graham, just on that, it was something I was thinking about with regards to Xabi Alonso at Real Madrid this season. Is there potentially going to be a similar nature to how Slot slotted in at Liverpool, where season one, there is going to be, sure, a bit of an overhaul in terms of how the team plays, in terms of Xabi Alonso's ideas on the team, but actually it'll be next summer before we see the real Xabi Alonso imprint on Real Madrid?
A good question. I mean, Slot didn't do too bad. I mean, I understand the terms that you framed it. He didn't do too badly in his first season. If Xabi Alonso can mimic him by winning the title without showing the true Xabi blueprint until a season later, I guess every Madridista would sign for the Slot ticket. I have massive amounts of two things. Anticipation at having Xabi Alonso back in Spanish football. I personally think it's wonderful that he's been repatriated to this league rather than what I expected when Klopp was leaving. I have to say, I expected Liverpool to go and seal him. They couldn't. He was tied to Leverkusen. Slot's done well. Great, super. But I view it as a bonus ball that we have got Xabi Alonso back in the league where I work. Next, I have huge amounts of sympathy for him, and I'll give you an anecdote to back up what I'm trying to explain. When he took over, when Ancelotti was leaving, for quite some time, although the club and Alonso and Ancelotti were clear, there was public debate about does he take over in time for that horrendous competition with FIFA Club World Cup. And he did, and because Madrid start to get through games and qualify for the knockouts, and Garcia began to score really interesting types of goals and looked like a fantastic product from the academy, there was huge excitement around Real Madrid. If you watched them, then you understood that they were treading water a little bit physically and mentally. But in Spain, admittedly, I was in the US on the other coast at the time, but in Spain, reading the newspapers and listening to radio podcasts, there was massive approbation for what was happening. And then I was asked to predict what would happen with Real Madrid against Paris Saint-Germain. Paris will score 4 against the minimum. I thought it'd be 4-2, it was 4-0. It was so crystal clear, obvious what was going to happen there. And one of the leading newspaper and radio contributors is a Madridista whose relationship with Florentino Perez blows hot and cold. Went on radio to say, well, is it possible that you can lose all your built-up credit in just one game? I think it is possible. I'm sitting there going, you idiot, how did you get this job? What was patently clear was the defeat against Paris Saint-Germain was not Xabi Alonso's fault. But that's the kind of snake bit that he's working in. So instead of this being the conquering hero returning now, for some, he's got a stain on his character already because he inherited an ailing, tired, injury-hit team and took them to 40-degree temperatures against clubs for whom this was the be-all and end-all. So what I would say to you is that I've got sympathy for him because, again, for the second season in a row, yeah, listeners, viewers, I'm banging on about this again. Last summer, Madrid's most important footballers had 5 days of pre-season. This time they've had about 11 reasonable days of pre-season. That's not enough. And therefore, I think it's Xabi Alonso's misfortune that during, again, I say the long course, which is La Liga, I think that this combination of mental and physical exhaustion, brain fog, the propensity to have repetitive injuries, I hope not serious injuries, comes when players, A, are run into the ground, which with seven trophies to play for last season, and I don't know how many games they ultimately played, 73 or 74, Real Madrid, that's true of Real Madrid. And also, when you don't have sufficient teaching time. Slot had time to teach his pupils in the training ground, both before the season started and then during the season, to a greater degree, in my opinion, than Xabi Alonso has had or will have. Now, he's got bright footballers, not just talented footballers, and he's an extraordinary, in my opinion, as a footballer or a coach, extraordinary communicator. And therefore, I don't think this problem will exhibit itself instantly. No way. But when there are remedial things to be done, the circuit DNA that, for example, Flick had time to din into the majority of his players last summer before they went on to win the title, that's not been available to Xabi Alonso. And therefore, good luck to him. They have a coach and a squad which could win the title, definitely. But will they? No, I think that during the season, you and I will be talking about, well, look, they suddenly, the tank looks a little bit empty. How did they lose that game? Where was the last 10-minute remontada for which Real Madrid are famous for? They haven't got Bellingham at the moment. He's out with his shoulder recuperation until late October. Maybe he comes back, and because there's a shortened season, he has a dynamic, brilliant season. And the final point I'll make is, how does even a clever coach like Xabi Alonso, whose work ethic was unimpeachable, how does he get Vinicius and Mbappe to press? With Kylian, you don't.
Interesting. That is a very interesting note to leave it on, and it may well be the first question next time we speak, Graham. No doubt after we've seen Real Madrid play a couple of games. Elite European football is back, Graham. Enjoy it.
Come on. Buenas noches.
All the best. Quick break.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today.